This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you from the team behind Cycling Plus, MBUK and BikeRadar.com.
Welcome to another Bike Radar podcast. This is one of our new regular Friday shorts. We're going to be trying to record these, every Friday, actually, through these difficult times, because we want to keep you entertained. We want to keep ourselves entertained and we want to keep talking about bikes. I'm Rob Spedding. I am the grandly titled content director here on Bike Radar. And I am joined today by Mr. Matthew Loveridge.
Oh, am I supposed to talk at that point? Sorry.
You can talk at that point if you want to be started.
Sorry, it completely blindsided me there.
That was a brilliant intro, though. Oh, let's crack on. So Matthew there has, like we said, we want to keep you entertained. So hello, Matthew.
Hi, Rob.
He's back again. And we're also joined by Simon Bromley. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Matthew. How's it going?
We're all in our houses, so we're not in the office. We're social distancing.
Yeah,
we're using the power of technology to bring us together.
So, Simon and Matthew, you're in your bedrooms, I believe. If we want to paint a picture for the listener,
I'm surrounded by soft furnishings, clothing, stuffed animals. You know, all the usual stuff you have in your bedroom.
All the usual stuff. I'm just in my dining room, so less glamorous. But we obviously have lots of stuffed animals on the wall in our dining room, you know, in the manor, Spedding Mansions. Anyway, we should crack on. We're going to be talking today about, I think it's our favourite road bikes, isn't it? We've decided that you would like to hear about our favourite road bikes. We are all road cyclists in the main. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say we're both proper road cyclists originally. I mean, I think we both dabble a bit. I ride mountain bikes a bit. I ride gravel quite a lot these days, but I identify as a roadie.
Yeah, I sort of say the same. I mean, I kind of got into road cycling because my granddad was into it. And, you know, like anyone, I kind of owned a mountain bike as a kid and you know, a dabble here and there. But my road is where my heart is.
Road is where the heart is. So, Matthew, I mean, let's put a bit of context on this. Can you remember your first proper, what you would say was a proper road bike?
It does depend how you define it, because the first thing I got that resembled a road bike was actually a fixie, but it had drop handlebars and it was very much a road-shaped bike. But if we discount that, which was a Genesis Flyer, I'd say my first proper road bike was a Cannondale R900 SI. In a beautiful shade of blue, which is a very, very lovely road bike. Unfortunately, it was also too big for me because being an idiot who didn't really understand bike fit, I'd bought something that was at least a size too large for me.
And how long ago was that?
That would have been 2009 or 8, possibly 8.
Okay.
Thereabouts.
And Simon?
I'm not that old.
You're not that old, no, because when I tell you what mine was, that will date me, I guess. Simon, how about you?
So I suppose a bit like Matthew, I kind of had a really rubbish, I had a rally road bike, the sort of cheapest thing I could find. And I used it for about a year before I got something, significantly better. And that was a Felt 75, which I got in 2010. And, you know, that was a kind of I'd say that was my first proper road bike. And I've actually still got that one. And I use it as a winter bike now.
That's a very sensible idea, actually. And a good... a good example of how bikes can be with you for life, I suppose, you know, which sort of leads me, I suppose, to mine a little bit. I'd say my first, and this really will date me, Matthew, you were saying you're not that old. I am quite old. My first proper road bike was a Rally Sprint that I got when I was probably about 12 in 1983, 84. It was a sort of a really heavy steel thing, 10 or 5 speeds. I only got that because my dad wouldn't give me a BMX. I still haven't forgiven him for that all these years later. And I actually bought a version of it, a Rally Sprint, two or three years ago to do La Roica. I always say that wrong. And you can read about that on Bike Radar. It is still there. And there's a great YouTube video of me doing La Roica in Bakewell on that bike. It lived down to my expectations. But then I think my first actual proper road bike in the modern sense of the word was a Trek 1000 that I bought in 1998, again aging me, and I used that really primarily as a commuter. When I was working in London, I had a sort of a 10 to 15 mile commute either way from the west of London into the centre. So I got my treated myself to a Trek 1000, which was white with blue and red, and it had a triple on it, and I thought I looked like my favourite cyclist at the time. He was an American guy. He rode a Trek, but we're not allowed to say his name.
Quite a successful chap in an asterisk-y sort of a way.
Yeah, I don't know. He didn't really win anything, did he?
No, nothing at all. Nothing at all. I mean, I obviously don't have that bike anymore. But that was my introduction to road cycling as an adult, I think it would be fair to say. And then I got a Felt, I think it was a Felt F4, actually, my first ever carbon fibre road bike. And again, that was sort of mid-2000s. And yeah, that was my sort of intro to carbon bikes. And obviously, since then, I have ridden a few more as I have been involved with Cycling Plus and Bike Radar for nigh on 13 years now. So this should be interesting. So what we actually wanted to talk about wasn't just our old bikes, but the stuff that's impressed us more recently. So we are talking about our favourite ever road bike. Matthew, what would your favourite ever road bike in the past decade or the time that you've been working as a bike journalist?
It's really hard to narrow it down to one, but I'm going to be really boringly mainstream and say that, leaving aside the Specialized Roubaix, which is currently my long-termer, which is dangerously close to being the best bike I've ever ridden, I'm going to leave that aside. Actually, another Specialized, the Tarmac, both the current generation, which I think is the SL6, and the previous generation SL5, I've ridden both, were just sublimely good bikes. And if you just wanted a race bike that was sort of very good at everything, incredibly comfortable, stiff, and really nice to look at as well, honestly think that the Tarmac has to be up there amongst the all-time greats.
And what, you know, I mean, you said that it's a great race bike, it's smooth, it's stiff. I mean, people sort of come to us when we review bikes from big brands and then do actually sometimes criticize us for saying we like bikes made, mass market bikes from big brands. and say, well, why don't you try a, you know, an artisan brand or something made out of a fancy material, not just boring carbon? What is it about the tarmac that means you, it sort of rises above that criticism?
I mean, I'd love to be sort of anti-establishment and say, oh, you know, boring, specialised, so mainstream. But the reality is that specialised is a country. Specialised is practically a country. Specialised is a company with extraordinarily large resources and the ability in R&D that a niche boutique manufacturer simply doesn't have. So there is a reason that they are at the cutting edge of road bike design. And, you know, a lot of people don't like Specialized, particularly as a company, because of their history of not necessarily being kindest to the little guy. But leaving all of that aside, just as a pure riding experience, they rank amongst the best bikes for me. They have to, because they are that good.
Yeah. I mean, I've never ridden a Specialized that I didn't like, I think. I mean, that's really uncontroversial to say, isn't it? God, that's awful. But, you know, the Roubaix, the first generation of Roubaix with Future Shocks that won our 2015 Bike of the Year, should do my research. You know, that was a fantastic bike and really just very interesting and well worthy of its prize at the time. And that massively impressed me. Simon, have you got an opinion on Specialized?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I agree with, I think all the things that Matthew says are true, is that they have a massive R&D budget and so they make perfectly decent bikes. I mean, you know, I think if someone was to say to you...
Perfectly decent.
Yeah, I think they're great bikes. They're capable of winning all the best races in the world. And, you know, my only problem with them is I think they're a bit dull. And so my choice for my kind of favorite ever bike is similar to Matthew's in a lot of senses, in the same, it kind of fills that similar all round hole, but I think my choice is slightly more exciting.
Go on then.
So my choice would be the Giant TCR. And
ooh,
Matthew, is that more exciting?
To be honest, I'm actually a huge fan of the TCR. Yeah.
So obviously the TCR, designed by, you know, legendary bike designer Mike Burrows, who designed the kind of Lotus 108 Boardman bikes. And, you know, he's into all kind of crazy things. But it changed bike design, and that when it had that kind of radical compact shape. And that really shook up the market, you know, back in the kind of, I think, the late 90s when it first came out. Now, some people might have said that it wasn't a good shakeup, because obviously it meant that the amount of sizes a brand had to produce went down significantly. But I think the TCR is a real modern classic. And, you know, I've got one from 2009, and the 2019 version was essentially the same bike. You know, they had the design... If I put Dura's Di2 on it from the current generation, you would be hard pressed to tell that it wasn't a 2019, 2020 bike. So, yeah.
Do you think it's worth sort of just outlining what we actually mean by the compact design of the TCR? Because it's ubiquitous now. You know, when it originally came out, it was revolutionary, really, wasn't it? Was that a bit over-egging it? I mean, because it was so different. So what is the and most bikes now are compact. So what was the difference?
So I think it was probably, you know, to be fair, it probably was more revolutionary for manufacturers, because it did mean they had to make fewer sizes. The main difference is it still has a double triangle design, but instead of having a horizontal top tube, it has a sloping top tube, and so the top tube meets the seat tube much lower down, and therefore standover height was greatly reduced. And rather than having to fit your bike that way, you could change the fit. You know, they realized they could change the fit parameters basically using saddle setback and stem length. And so manufacturers then only had to produce, you know, molds for carbon frames, which obviously cut costs quite a bit, in sort of four or five sizes, rather than offering a, you know, a 48, a 50, 52, 54, 56, 58, 60, you know, and so it massively cut costs.
Yeah. I mean, I have to concur with you on the TCR as actually a bike that's just great to ride. One of the first bike launches I ever went on was with Giant in Mallorca. It was it's a hard life, and it was for a TCR iteration. And it was the first time I remember riding a bike and actually just thinking, wow, this makes me feel like a better cyclist than I actually am. Which is
what we're looking for, isn't it?
Yeah. We used to call it thing, which means nothing, but you'd get on a bike and straight away you would start riding and think, I'm again, so it's probably quite pretentious, but oh, I'm part of the machine. I'm not just sitting on top of it. It really worked with me. And I really enjoyed riding it. And it was one of the first road bikes that I sort of thought, yeah, I love this.
I'm not going to disagree with Simon's choice, actually, because the TCR would definitely be up there for me. I've ridden at least one or two. The most recent disc version was an absolutely delightful bike. But I know that was it a couple of years ago, it was the bike of the year. It was just the basic TCR with rim brakes. Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, if you're going to spend, say, £1,500 to £2,000 on a road bike, a rim brake TCR is a damn good buy, because that's a hell of a lot of bike for the money.
It is. And funnily enough, the Giant are gonna, well, they're gonna do reasonably well out of this, because a bike that I really enjoyed when it first came out was the Giant Propel. So I don't know whether that is controversial, but it was one of the first. It was when aero bikes were really sort of starting to find their feet, so to speak. And it went from that. Aero bikes were always criticized as being really heavy, really uncomfortable, but fast. And the Propel was one of the first aero bikes that I rode that was comfortable and fast and light and superbly enjoyable to chuck around and I'd say race on, but I didn't race. I did one TT on it. I did it really slowly. I did the Tour of Cambridgeshire Grand Fondo on it, and did that as quickly as I probably would ever ride the sort of 100 miles or so, but that was mainly because it was lots of drafting. But that was just a really exciting and enjoyable bike. Have you guys had experience of the Propel?
I don't think I've ever actually ridden a Propel, strangely enough.
I recommend it.
Yeah. Interestingly, you talk about the thing, that sort of that feeling of specialness from a bike, and when it's like an extension of your body. Might be a review cliche, but it is a real kind of feeling that you get. I've yet to have that, I would say, actually, from an aero bike, a pure aero bike. I'm talking like most road bikes have some aero features now, including the likes of the Tarmac. And pretty much everything seems to have truncated aerofoil tube sections now. But in terms of like pure aero bikes that are explicitly set out to be an aero bike first and not an all-rounder, I haven't yet met one that I truly bonded with in that way. But that might be as much a reflection of my personal prejudices as anything else.
And Simon, you're a TT rider, so aero is everything. Have you experienced the Propel or other any aero bikes that you've ridden that you fell in love with? Or
Because I've not been a cycling journalist that long, I haven't had access to all kind of manners of wonderful aerodynamic expensive machines. But there was a while when
tiny
I was really
violins.
You know, maybe that might change in the future, I guess. But there was a time when I was seriously considered buying a Propel, because like you said, it looked kind of like an aero bike with all round credentials, and I kind of liked the look of it. I think the non standard brakes put me off it quite a bit, and I kind of wish it had had just normal rim brakes rather than the behind the fork V brakes, because we love disc brakes, we love rim brakes and everything on Bike Radar, but I'm a real sucker for standard brakes,
right?
Of any kind. And so I was sort of slight, maybe I was wrong to be skeptical, but I was slightly skeptical of the behind the fork brakes.
I never had to really do much work on them. So that's probably why I'd be much more skeptical if I'd had to do work on them, because I am the world's worst mechanic. So maybe I should hang a whole judgment there. How about sort of we talked about carbon bikes there. I've got very fond memories of the Enigma Etape. I think it was the, well, it was a titanium bike that was built quite very closely to my measurements, and that was one that there is a cliche in bike journalism when you sort of ride a steel bike or a titanium bike that it kind of feels more alive beneath you compared to a carbon or an aluminium bike, and I don't think I would go that far, but that bike was just, that was a real joy to ride, because it was, you know, it was handcrafted, hand built, measured, made to fit me, and it's just and titanium is just a lovely material, and it was a very different feel to the carbon bikes that I'd been riding up until that point. So you know, I've got very fond memories of that, and would certainly, when I come to buy a bike again, or buy another bike, would be considering titanium. So what about you, Matthew? Have you experienced metal in its purest form?
Yeah, I mean, I've ridden quite a few titanium bikes. I used to own one as well. I had a Van Nicolas Yukon for years, which was the kind of classic winter bike with full mudguards and everything. And it was a very nice bike, but it wasn't the most exciting thing. I remember having the feeling getting on it after a summer on my Scott Addict race bike and thinking that I had a puncture just because the back end of the bike felt so dull and soft. But saying that, I've ridden other titanium bikes that were genuinely quite racy feeling, amongst which actually a version of, I think it was an Enigma Etape, was an absolutely delightful bike. Titanium is a really wonderful material. I like, again, a cliche, but the sort of timelessness of titanium, because fundamentally titanium bikes from the present look a lot like titanium bikes from 20 years ago. Obviously the components are a bit different, but the material doesn't really change. There are a few makers who like paint their titanium bikes, but basically titanium looks like titanium. I quite like that, but it's a very different animal, certainly to carbon. It isn't as easily optimized as carbon.
Simon, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd agree with that. If I was going to buy a titanium or a steel road bike, I'd certainly want something that had that kind of showed off the metal and had a kind of classic geometry and appearance to it. Because I think that's kind of what you're looking for, isn't it? It's, you know, you're not looking for performance at all costs. You're looking for something more timeless, and they certainly deliver on that. You know, I think, as always, these things are all, you know, marginal. Like, I've ridden plenty of kind of steel bikes, you know, old, and a couple of newer ones as well. And like you say, that, you know, they feel slightly different to a carbon road bike, you know, but a lot of that can be changed depending on what wheels you put in the frame and things like that. And also what kind of riding you're doing. You know, if you're kind of just riding along the flat at 20k an hour, there's not much difference, but the differences become slightly more apparent, you know, whether you're going uphill or whether you're maybe going downhill, you know, that sort of thing.
I think one thing we can establish there is that I say titanium and you two say titanium. Let's call the whole thing off. So if we sort of bring ourselves, I suppose, up to date, Matthew, you've already talked about the Tarmac, and you're a big fan of that, the sort of the current crop of bikes. I mean, we've just had our Bike of the Year issue in Cycling Plus, and we've named Bike of the Year on Bike Radar as well. It's all there for you to see, and you can buy the magazines too. Please do. Cannondale Super 6 Evo, that's the winner there. We weren't actually the judges on that one, but we obviously agree with our judges on that front. But if you weren't going to buy that bike, what would you be going for right now?
How much money are we allowed to spend?
Oh, we're rolling in cash.
Well, based on my current long-term experience, I'd be really boring and buy that Roubaix because it's just ridiculously good bike. Mm. I think if I were on a budget, the likes of Canyon are still incredibly hard to beat. Or like I said, in that mid-range, Giant TCR. Tarmac. Coming back to the Tarmac thing, it's like a Golf GTI. It's not the best at anything, but it's just like, you know, it's going to be quite good. And that's what it comes down to.
Simon?
Yeah, it's kind of really difficult. I think it would depend what kind of riding I would I'd want to be doing. If I was going to buy a road bike, I'd probably really want the new Canyonair road that they haven't released yet. Because if I was obviously to buy, I just feel like if I was to buy the Canyonair road right now, they'd release the new one in, you know, next year or something, and I'd instantly be annoyed. But I think like Matthew says, like it, you know, they'd represent fantastic value. They look really good. And in fact, if the budget's unlimited, I'd take it to a custom paint place and get them to do it in a nice paint job. Because I think that would be the only thing where I'd fault Canyon, is that their paint jobs are a bit dull. So yeah,
they are quite dull. Yeah,
but you obviously you like excitement, so that's fair. And for you, Simon, as well, you know that you could the aero could cost you a pretty penny. Is there a sort of a budget option that you would think about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I wanted an aero road bike, you know, which I would because aero is everything, then you know, Giant's cheaper Propels these days seem to. I mean, I'm sure they're like a kilo heavier than the top of the range version, but I'm sure if you put them in the wind tunnel, they're just as fast. And you know, I can't, it's incredible what you can get now for 1500, $2,000. You know, I mean, I think you can get a Giant Propel with carbon wheels for under sort of $2,500 these days, which, you know, five years ago would have been incredible. So
it's good. I'm going to start with my sort of budget one, and it is, so I would look at something like from Decathlon, a Triban RC 500, something like that. I mean, they are ridiculously good value and good to ride too, you know, they're sub £1,000, £700. You can probably get them cheaper during sales, and they just represent great value for money and are good fun to ride, particularly if you sort of opt for the slightly more gravelly version of the bike. It becomes really versatile, and it's just a great first road bike, first gravel bike, or just a great general bike if you are on a budget. But, you know, we are talking about money, no object. So for my money, no object choice, I am probably going to be a little bit boring, maybe, but I'm going for a mainstream brand. I'm going for Trek. I'm going for their Madone SLR. And I'm going to go for the Project Ones because, it will be well over £10,000, $10,000. I can customize it to a pretty good extent, get some spangly metallic pearlescent paint, look the business in my bike radar kit and my fluorescent yellow shoes, but also riding a really fast aero bike, which when I was lucky enough again to be out hard life in Wisconsin for the launch of that, and I've ridden it subsequently, and it is another bike that it makes me feel a much better, much faster, much more competent rider than I actually am. So basically all the gear, no idea, but I really like that bike. And the fact you can customize the cushioning or the vertical compliance using the ISOSB decoupler in the top tube is just kind of a nice thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I certainly just go back on your point about the Triban from Decathlon. I certainly agree about that. I mean, I actually brought my wife one of those bikes about a year ago because, yeah, when we were looking for something, you know, really, really cheap, but still good. I couldn't find anything that matched Decathlon for value. And so that was absolutely a great bike at a great price.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for them as well. They're really good bikes.
So some Triban love coming from us there. Well, I'm not sure we quite came to the conclusion of our favourite or the best bikes ever, but I think we had a nice lockdown chat there, didn't we, gentlemen?
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed myself.
Excellent. Matthew, I'm hoping you enjoyed yourself too.
I'm tumescent.
I'm also hoping that the listeners enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. We hope you are still getting to ride wherever you are. Let us know in comments on Bike Radar what you're doing in these tricky times. Keep riding, keep visiting Bike Radar, keep listening to our podcasts. Like and subscribe us wherever you can. And we will be with you again soon. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Simon.
Thank you very much, Rob.
And thank you very much, Matthew.
Pleasure to be here.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you want any more information on what we've been talking about or more news and views on cycling, check out bikeradar.com.